So thank you very much, Melissa. Our next presentation, we will have Martha Sandberry presenting on behalf of Christina Kinzinger. Martha is the manager of the Environmental Health Surveillance Section, Division of Environmental Health at the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. She is the principal investigator for Michigan's newly funded Environmental Public Health Tracking Program, and she oversees a variety of activities in preparedness and occupational health surveillance. Prior to coming to Michigan's State Health Department in 2001, she was at the New Jersey Department of Health for almost 17 years. She was on the CSTE Executive Board from 2007 to 2012, and her presentation today describes the results of a survey that started, that was developed during her tenure on the board. Thank you.
Thank you. So the origin of the survey is sitting in the back of the room there, Henry Anderson from Wisconsin. And this was when I was on the board for environmental. And he, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to read this because this doesn't flow easily. Christina was supposed to be here and her travel didn't get approved. So anyway, I'm pinch hitting for her. But anyway, so the question he posed to the environmental subcommittee was, we need to understand the scope of applied environmental epidemiology practice related to traditional public health surveillance based on reporting of health conditions or threats. And he called this sentinel event surveillance, in contradistinction to the analyses of large population-based data sets like death and hospitalization, data which are the focus of the CDC-funded tracking network. More specifically, he asked, how many state health and health environmental programs collect reports of environmentally related health conditions, whether based on legal reporting requirements or from other sources, and use them for surveillance? How many have systems in place for surveillance of exposure events? And what are the components of these systems? How many have policies, procedures, data collection tools, and so forth that they would be willing to share with other jurisdictions? And I'm curious to know if any of you remember that you were the one who completed this survey when it came out from CSTE. This was back in 2013. So, good, thank you. If you have any comments about the survey, feel free to speak up. So we decided that we were going to try and answer this question by doing a survey of all 50 states. And these were the objectives, trying to formulate Andy's questions in two specific objectives, which is sort of defining the scope of surveillance for these sentinel events and identifying the materials that the states have developed that could be used and be helpful to other jurisdictions. So we worked on this survey a long time, the approach that we took was to generate a list of 11 health conditions and 9 exposure event types that we felt were issues that most environmental public health programs were likely to have had to have addressed. For each of the conditions, the respondent was asked to identify the sources of the reports, the estimated numbers of cases or events received a year, and the types of follow-up that were conducted, including case interviews and field investigations, and whether these data were summarized and disseminated to the public. And in addition, the survey asked a number of questions about infrastructure and barriers and willingness to share protocols and materials. So here are the 11 conditions and 9 exposure events. Can you all see all the way to the bottom of the slide, hopefully? I won't read all of them because I'm going to read them in a little bit anyway. And then we came up with a set of definitions for the respondent to try and make clear what we were talking about, which we had a lot of discussions about how we were going to sort of put our arms around the concept and make it clear so people understood how they were supposed to answer the questions. The survey was put into an EpiInfo survey, kind of like SurveyMonkey. We pilot tested it in the fall of 2013. And it was emailed then to the environmental EPI points of contact maintained by CSDE, or where we didn't have a good contact, by the EH points of contact maintained by ASTHO, and also to some state epidemiologists. So we included all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and our 5 largest cities. And before preparing the data set from the respondents for analysis, the CSDE office staff matched the respondent agency names with information from sources about funding, and specifically whether each state that responded had tracking funds or NIOSH surveillance funds. And we also matched the results with results in the CSDE State Reportable Conditions Assessment. And for those of you who are not familiar with the SRCA, this is a comprehensive survey CSDE does every several years to identify the health conditions that are legally reportable in each case. And the results are posted up on the CSDE website. You can look up any state and what's reportable and who's required to report it and so on. So first I'll talk about the conditions, and I bet not everybody in the back is going to be able to read the x-axis there. So I think I'm going to just read it quickly. So this is this stacked bar chart is organized by from the most number of states down to the least number of states reporting that they collect reports on any of these 11 conditions. So you know, on the far left, it's child-led. 96% of our respondents said they collected these reports. So we had 45 respondents out of the 56 jurisdictions that we asked for a response, and that included 44 states and one local jurisdiction. So I'm going to refer to them as agencies from now on rather than states. And when the for each condition, the respondents were asked to identify how many case reports they received a year, but in groupings. So you know, from 0 to 10 cases per year, 11 to 100, and 101 to 1,000, and then over 1,000. And those are the color. Those are color coded there. So the colors correspond. The dark blue, I guess that's dark blue, at the bottom is they had less than 11 cases per year. And so on. Do I need to read the percents going all the way from top to bottom, or can people see? I see nods. Okay, then I won't read it. But you know, clearly for the adult and child-led toxicity, most of the states do collect that data, and at least 50% of the states say they have well over 100 case reports a year. And in some cases over 1,000 case reports a year. Don't know why some of the agencies that said they did collect the case reports but didn't provide an estimate for how many they received a year, and that's the light blue that's at the top of each bar. So in terms of sources of case reports, not surprisingly, physicians and laboratories were the most common sources of data. However, poison control reporting and referral from external agency were notable sources for pesticide illness. Phone calls from the public to report acute clusters was also notable. And we snuck in a question there about syndromic surveillance, even though it didn't quite fit in with this definition of case-based surveillance, just because we were interested, I guess. And obviously, a lot of people are interested. There was discussion for most of yesterday in the environmental session about you know, real-time surveillance and syndromic surveillance. So we asked if syndromic surveillance was one source of their surveillance for these each of these 11 conditions. And as you can see, it was used by 47% of the agencies, most commonly for acute disease clusters and carbon dioxide poisoning. In terms of the percents identifying what kind of follow-up they did, there was a wide range of responses based on the types of follow-up and the condition. So for 11 of the 7 conditions, more than 70% of the agencies said they did case interviews. Between 50 and 70% of the agencies said they did exposure investigations. For only 7, though, out of the 11 conditions that we surveyed. And medical records was also notable activity, follow-up activity. This is the average percent of cases triggering an exposure investigation annually. And acute clusters is at the top of the list, with on average almost 60% of reported clusters receiving an exposure investigation. Notably, one of the lowest percent of cases receiving a follow-up is adult lead toxicity. This may be due to the fact that most adult blood lead levels are generally quite low, which I put in quotes because there's no such thing as any safe level of blood lead, but this may not be considered actionable, especially if the agency uses OSHA to do their exposure investigations. Respondents were asked if they summarized and disseminated their case and investigation data, which is, of course, one of the core parts of doing surveillance, is get the summarize the data and get it out to people. And we certainly heard this morning in our plenary of how important it is to policymakers to have that data available to them in a useful format. And as you can see, the percent of agencies doing this varied by condition, with notably for 6 of the 11 conditions, less than 50% of the agencies collecting the data reported out on it. But even for child lead toxicity, only 75% of the agencies collecting the health data summarized and disseminated it, and only 30% summarize the exposure investigation activities. So the blue is the summarizing case data, and the green bar is what percent summarize the exposure investigation data. I'll talk now about the exposure events questions. So like the stacked bar chart of conditions, this stacked bar chart represents the information about the numbers of agencies collecting events reports, and how many of these reports are received annually in ranges. Again, color-coded. More than 3/4 of the agencies track reports of chemically contaminated water and mold. On the other hand, only 38% track carbon monoxide releases. In contrast to the numbers of health conditions reported, you can see that a large proportion of agencies receive 10 or less reports a year for most of these events. And then only for mold do more than half of the agencies receive over 100 reports a year. The sources of reports for exposure events, again, varied, where for mold, for example, over 3/4 of the agencies receive the reports from public phone calls. This may sound familiar to those of us in our offices. Don't we have people designated to answer the phone just to deal with all those mold calls? And referrals from local health and other external agencies were most common for water contamination. The types of follow-up actions could include confirming the event, agency referrals, technical assistance, site visits, epidemiologic investigation, local health department referral, and so on. And so follow-up was most commonly referrals to regulatory agencies and provision of technical assistance. Radiation events, mercury spills, contaminated water were followed up by a site visit in over 60% of the agencies. And a follow-up EPI investigation was noted by less than half the agencies for all events, except for chemically contaminated food, where 73% said they would do an EPI investigation. And here you can see the average percent of events that received any kind of follow-up action. And although few events were reported annually for most types, chemical contamination of water and food triggered follow-up most commonly for about 80% of events reported. Exposure event data were relatively infrequently summarized and made public across the types of events. The most common exposure events summarized were carbon monoxide releases, with 41% of the agencies saying they would do that, that received those reports. Chemical contamination of water at 39%, and other chemical releases or spills at 39%. I'm going to talk about a couple of other highlights from the assessment. For each condition, the respondent was asked whether the condition was legally reportable, and that's the blue bar, and whether they collected the data, which is the green bar, and we've seen the data from the green bars already in our first bar chart. And as you can see here, for all of the conditions, some proportion of agencies collecting the data did not have legal authority under their public health reporting laws or regulations. And while this isn't surprising for conditions like hyperthermia or disease clusters, it certainly surprised me that there were any agencies getting reports of child lead toxicity without legal authority, or for that matter, any of the metals toxicities, given the fact that the primary report source for these is usually going to be laboratory reporting with identifiers, just like laboratory reporting for communicable diseases. So the question was the respondent in that agency not aware of what's reportable in their state? And to try and answer this, we compared our results with data in the CSD SRCA. So six of our conditions are explicitly listed in the SRCA and are part of their survey that CSTE does. And there's their child and adult lead toxicity, mercury, arsenic, and cadmium toxicity, and acute pesticide illness and injury. And as you can see, with the exception of lead, for all of these other conditions, more states said these were reportable conditions than our respondents believed that to be the case. We also gave the respondents the option to add to fill out for two additional conditions other than the ones that we had listed each for health conditions and exposure events. They could fill out and give the same information about two additional conditions they would want to provide. And this is just the list verbatim. One state each filled out, gave the information about each of these types of events and conditions, with one exception where two states talked about meth labs. But it's sort of all over the place. And it's possible if they had four or five options, they could have done it for four or five conditions. We may have seen a lot more than that. We don't know. So we asked about, this is my old presentation, whatever. Anyway, I slightly redid this slide, but it's fine. We asked about, FTEs that were designated to these activities, and on average, the respondents noted they had seven FTEs for environmental illness exposure and event monitoring, and included one occupational and six environmental. Less than 50% of the respondents were funded for tracking or for NIOSH occupational health surveillance. The agencies with tracking funding had more environmental FTEs, 9.1 compared to 3.9, and significantly more total FTEs, including occupational, so it's 10.9 compared to 4.5 devoted to this surveillance. So our data obviously suggests that the agencies that have funding from NIOSH and NCEH were more likely to have case-based surveillance systems and exposure events, and we're also for doing various kinds of case follow-up. Regardless of these differences, overall, the agencies indicated that they conduct a variety of environmental health and exposure monitoring activities, although there was also wide variation in the numbers and types of conditions and events that they monitor. But no condition or event type was under surveillance by 100% of the states, and in fact, for most of these conditions, it was considerably less percent than that. Needless to say, most of the agencies identified funding as the barrier to more activities, and they also noted that there are some limitations to data collection if they don't have the legal authority to do that. So just before I give my recommendations, some limitations. Obviously, we didn't have 100% response rate. We had 80%. CSTE always likes to get 100% response rate on all of their surveys, but we tried. We made a lot of phone calls, but this is what we could do. So it's likely that our results might be a little bit different if we had a larger response rate. The information was dependent on knowledge and role of the respondent, and for each respondent, they self-identified what their role was in their agency. 20% identified themselves as state epidemiologists, 53% with various levels of administrative responsibility, like manager or something like that, and then by discipline, epidemiologist or toxicologist for 25%. So in some of the areas we pointed out, for example, understanding reporting requirements, accuracy of the response could have varied considerably based on respondent role. And another limitation is we didn't include the territories and we didn't include local health departments other than those five large cities. And again, our answers, our summary might look different if we had been more comprehensive. In terms of the recommendations, we want to recommend that and identify the barriers to getting agencies to publish surveillance and investigation data and address those barriers. Agencies should be encouraged to do more of this. And again, this may be a funding and resource issue. It takes a lot of time and resources to pull all the data in and get it summarized and put out the report and get your agency to approve and et cetera, et cetera. But I really heard this morning from the New York City Health Commissioner how much she values summary information. So I know we kind of tear our hair out sometimes about how to summarize and get people to understand it, but that was a real take-home message to me that we need to work really hard on that. And there's obviously a richness of data that the states are collecting here, and it's important to get it out. Secondly, is the discrepancy between our survey and the SRCA results, and we really need to figure out why. It could be that the respondents are not familiar with their own public health code, or there could be some problems with the SRCA survey itself, and CSDE needs to work on that. And if you've really looked at that in any detail, you might see why there might be some room for misinterpretation of the SRCA. Third is related to syndromic surveillance. Again, we've heard a lot yesterday about the interest in this and importance of this potentially in environmental health. In our survey, obviously not that many agencies are using it for non-infectious conditions, so we need to all, you know, support the efforts of CSTE and NCH and the tracking states in understanding and learning how to use that tool for non-infectious surveillance. And fourthly, given the fact that almost 60% of the respondents indicated that they would be willing to share their tools and procedures, I'm hoping that CSDE in the next year will develop a repository, go back, follow up with those states, and develop a repository of those tools and make it available to states so that that it can perhaps spur more activity in this sentinel event kind of surveillance. And finally, of course, may our federal partners here that we need more money to do all of these activities. Thank you. Any questions? Did I mention the full report is on the CSC website? It just got up, and there might be a couple out on the table. There's a lot more data in there. This was a challenge to figure out how to summarize it in 25 minutes.